Chapter 2. With part of our plan fleshed out, we broke away from each other and went back to the celebration. Edeni told us if we wanted to head toward Tulna, we'd have to travel through the desert for a second time and then go west. If the scientist did what I thought she would and stuck to her nature, she'd return to the city where she was most comfortable. I knew my women wanted me to rest, but I couldn't sit still and celebrate with the rest of my soldiers at a time like this. While all of their backs were turned, I snuck out of the manor and moved through Granum's streets. The buildings on either side of me loomed high overhead, but black smoke billowed into the sky when I looked in the distance. My soldiers and monster women had destroyed half of the city, but thankfully we'd managed to collect all of the supplies we needed and captured all the aristocrats. There weren't as many men here, and that worried me. When we'd gone to Burskan, Samilla had said something about the queen needing soldiers, and that whoever could spare men should send them to the capital. What did the queen need them for? And what was she doing with them? I knew I wouldn't know until we reached the capital, but I was sure once we conquered more cities we'd soon learn more about what was going on. I knew Edeni and my other women thought I was working too hard and needed to rest, but I knew my body better than they did. I could push on and continue working for my army while they celebrated our win. I was the type of man who couldn't sit by and patiently wait for the time to pass. All of them knew I was a scientist and a doctor, and idle hands were poison to men like me. When I glanced over my shoulder toward the manor at the end of the street, I could still hear the boisterous voices of my drunk soldiers, and I chuckled lightly under my breath. They deserved these few days of reprieve, but I needed to work harder, not just for them, but for myself and my monster women. We were building a new world, creating a whole new generation of women who believed men were equal to them, and I needed to be the one who made sure that all of it happened. My boots clunked against the cold, wet pavement as I maneuvered around steaming piles of brown gunk. Edeni had wanted me to burn this city to the ground and raise it so we could rebuild it anew, and I would do just that once I was in place as the king. Granum would be no more, and I would make sure the wall surrounding it would be torn down. Before we attacked Granum, it had been a city of secrets and mystery. The citizens weren't allowed to come in or leave because of the massive fortifications, but once I was finished with it, it would be a free city where men and women could do as they pleased. I wouldn't allow another aristocrat to sully this holy city that Edeni's ancestors had built so many years ago. Before long, I made it back to the main street, and my eyes rested on the massive hole in the wall we'd created earlier in the night. Now that the dust had cleared, I finally made out how truly enormous it was. Just as I'd predicted, it was large enough for my entire army to fit through, and as I hurried across the large wooden planks back toward the wood, I noticed how bent they'd become from the weight of my soldiers. When I lifted my head toward the steep incline, I could make out the caravan's lights in the distance. Once the fighting stopped, Cecilia had taken all of the aristocrats back to the cabins and locked them in cages. I assumed the Black Drake woman had turned on the lights because it made the trips back and forth much easier. Once I reached the caravan, I glanced around and took account of all the cages placed in between trees and the clearing beyond where the guard tower was. Most of the women were fast asleep. If they weren't, they slipped in and out of consciousness. My gaze landed on a single cage, and to my surprise, a pair of wide, terrified eyes, and they held my stare for a long time. I almost couldn't make out her face from the swatches of black clothing and hair that surrounded her from all directions. But it was undoubtedly. "A child?" I breathed, took a step forward, and immediately the petite girl shrunk away from me. "It's all right, my dear. There's nothing to be afraid of." I'd almost forgotten there were children in the cities, and we'd transformed all the ones from Edenheart and Burskan, but this was my first time actually seeing one awake in a cage.
"Where's my mummy?"
the girl asked, struggled forward, and pressed her hands to the cage bars.
"Have you seen my mummy? I lost her, and I can't find her. Sir, can you help me find my mummy? She's probably worried sick because she can't find me."
I stared into the girl's wide, bright blue eyes and felt something inside myself shift. When we'd first locked eyes, I guessed she'd probably curse or spit at me, like most of the adult aristocrats would have done. But that's when it hit me. This girl could only have been 7 or 8 years old. She witnessed the hatred and rage the aristocrats aimed at their workers, but she'd yet to develop such hate in herself. To her, I was just another man in the handful of men who lived in Granum. She hadn't harbored any of those emotions yet. She was far too young to understand the reason why men were treated so poorly. As I stared at her, I could have easily imagined Edeny at this age, though I knew the Duchess probably had already started to abuse her servants by then. From this girl's clothes and appearance, she didn't look poor. The navy dress she wore looked clean except for a few stains here and there, but that could have come from the muck in the streets or the dust in the air from the hole blasted in the wall. Her dark brown hair was tightly curled into ringlets, and her round, doll-like cheeks were tinted bright pink against the frigid air. She was a pretty child, and whoever was her mother loved her dearly. But if her mother were a wealthy aristocrat, she'd be transformed within the next few hours. "I don't know where your mother is," I uttered, stepped forward, and lowered myself down onto a single knee. "I'm very sorry about that."
"Can you let me out?"
the child squeaked.
"If I don't get home soon, my mother will be distraught."
Suddenly, a chill rushed over me, and I instantly recognized the feeling of Cecilia's strange abilities. I turned my head right as the redhead appeared out of an inky blue portal. She was so beautiful with her emerald eyes, high cheekbones, and small but plump lips. Her markings were the strangest I'd ever seen come out of my machine, but I loved them so much. The ones on her legs were entirely black and came up to about mid-thigh. At the edge of the marking was a single neon green line that surrounded the entirety of her leg. Her arms were the same, except the sooty black came up to her elbow and ended at a sharp angle as if she were wearing a glove.
"Oh, that's where you snuck off to,"
the redhead laughed lightly, and then her dark eyes settled on the child in front of us.
Oh.
"She's looking for her mother," I uttered, turned, and stared at the black drake woman. I didn't know what to do in this situation. Most of the time when we transformed children, we did it when all of them were heavily sedated and then sent them off to a small portion of the army where they wouldn't have to fight. Most of them we either sent back to the empty city of Edenheart, where I'd instructed 3 monster women to attend to while the rest of the army was off fighting. Cecilia smiled softly, lowered herself closer to the ground, and rested her folded arms over her knees. The girl seemed more comfortable with the female presence and scooted closer to the cage's bars.
"Oh, your mother isn't here right now,"
the redhead soothed.
"But she will be very soon, I promise. Hey, why don't you come with us? We can wait for her inside of the caravan. It's a lot warmer, and there's plenty to eat. We could get you a snack, and then we'll wait for your mother to come and get you."
The little girl's enormous blue eyes shifted between Cecilia and me, then finally rested on the black drake woman. She didn't seem to trust me, but she appeared more willing to come along since Cecilia was here. If that was the extent of this little girl's fear when it came to men, I could work with it. "We're going to open this up, okay?" I asked with a lighthearted smile.
Okay.
The little girl nodded and then scuttled backward. Instantly, I paused as my hands reached for the lock. This could be a trap. Some of these women could have forced the little girl to get one of us to open the cage, and then they'd attack us all at once. Were they really pretending to be knocked out? No, I already knew that my soldiers had given all of them heavy doses of the tranquilizer. They had to be out cold by now, but just to be safe, I turned back toward the black drake woman. "Cecilia," I ordered, "portal her out." The redhead blinked at me once and then nodded without hesitation. Within a blink of an eye, the little girl was inside of the cage in front of it, and the next, she sat on the hard-packed earth beside me. I turned her and offered my hand, but for a moment she stared down at it in silence. "My name is Charles Rayburn," I smiled tenderly. "I'm here to save you and your mother. What's your name?"
"Amelia,"
the child breathed, lowered her head, and then slipped her hand into mine.
"Mr. Rayburn, can you please find my mommy? She's pretty important, and I think something bad has happened to the city."
"What's your mother's name?" I asked, despite the sneaking suspicion growing in my mind.
"Marchioness Aliana,"
the little girl answered easily.
"She left me with my governess, Mary Ann, but a bunch of men attacked us. They threw these strange metal things at us, and Mary Ann fell down. She wouldn't get up, no matter what I did. I kept tugging on her sleeve and patting her cheeks, but it didn't work. Then the men carried my governess away, and I passed out too.
I'm sure that if we wait for her, I explained, she'll come to collect you.
You're not with the strange men, are you?
Amelia gasped and scooted away from me.
You look like a regular servant, but I could be wrong. My mother always said never to trust men, and
I'm not with them. I lied through my teeth. I promise. We won't hurt you. This is my mistress, Cecilia. She's the owner of this caravan. We were merely waiting for the bridge to open and allow us inside when those strange men came and attacked your lovely city.
Then why are the cages outside of your caravan?
The Marchioness's daughter asked. Coincidence, I think, I nodded. We left for a few days on horseback to fetch more supplies, and we arrived right as they were loading everyone into the cages. She may have been a child, but her mind was sharp, and I could tell from the look in her eyes she had more questions. Suddenly, Cecilia grabbed Amelia by the wrist with a comforting grin and tugged her gently to her feet.
Come on,
the Black Drake woman urged.
Let's get you something to eat. We have plenty of blankets. From the looks of it, those scary men aren't coming back for a very long time, so we're going to prepare to leave before they get back.
Okay.
Amelia stammered and quickly followed after the redhead. Cecilia glanced over her shoulder at me right as we reached the caravans. This little girl fully believed her mother was out there searching for her, and we were allowing her to believe that. The redhead gulped loudly, gripped the door handle tightly in her hands, and then swung it open. The warmth from inside the cabin rushed over us, and instantly the little brunette sighed happily. Cecilia guided the young girl to one of the couches, and I moved toward the kitchen for any food we might have left over. The remains of Ryan and Daisy's dinner sat on the table, nearly untouched from when we portaled all the way from the desert to the outskirts of Granum. I snatched up a plate of cookies that Ryan had hidden away in one of the cupboards, and then brought it back out to Amelia and Cecilia. The Black Drake woman had sat down on the couch beside the little girl, and Amelia had cuddled into the redhead's side. When I entered the room, the Marchioness's daughter flinched, and then relaxed when she saw it was me. This could be an opportunity for us if I played my cards right, so I grabbed one of the cookies from the plate and offered it to the small brunette. Amelia eagerly took it and nibbled at it with her eyes slightly closed. Cecilia and I could tell she was tired, and if we could lull her to a state of half-consciousness, maybe we could get some useful information out of her. I sat down on the couch opposite of them, settled the plate of cookies down on the coffee table, and then leaned back with my arms crossed over my chest. Amelia seemed to pay me no mind and whispered to Cecilia as if she'd known the redhead her entire life. I'd thought maybe the little girl would be suspicious of the Black Drake woman, but it seemed her odd appearance hadn't fazed her a bit. Cecilia's emerald eyes met mine, and she seemed to understand what we needed to do.
Amelia?
The redhead soothed in a soft voice, ran a hand over the child's curly hair, and leaned forward to look her in the eye.
You said your mother is the Marchioness of the city?
That's right,
the little girl crooned, snatched up another cookie and scarfed it down.
She's in control of the whole city. Isn't that fantastic?
Where did you live before?
The Black Drake woman asked.
In the capital.
Amelia smiled, leaned back against Cecilia, and lifted her perfectly manicured hands into the air.
We used to live in the Third Ring. Barely anyone gets to live there, and people who do are really important to the queen.
What did your mother do there? I whispered low enough that Amelia wouldn't hear, and Cecilia immediately repeated it.
Oh, she worked for the queen,
the little brunette sang.
I met her a bunch of times. She's so pretty and nice. I want to be like her when I grow up, but my mummy says I probably won't be as tall as the queen. Then my mummy got sent here. I hate it here.
Why?
The redhead asked for me.
It's so dirty,
the child pouted.
The streets are disgusting. There are hardly any places where I can play. I mainly stay inside of the manor because it's so disgusting outside. Mummy only would let me venture out to the 19th ward where the women with more money live. It's cleaner there, but I miss my old friends back in the capital.
What was your mummy doing here?
Cecilia asked in a sing-song voice.
I mean, it must have been pretty important if she came all the way here from the capital.
Well, apparently, she took the city from this really dumb ruler who had it before, and my mommy was building things for the queen. That's why there's so many factories around the city.
Do you know what she was building? I asked, and the little girl's eyes met mine. Emilia's lips pressed into a firm line, and her cheeks puffed out as she concentrated. I could tell from the hazy look in her eyes she was tired, and the warmth of the caravan was lulling her to sleep. It's all right, I soothed. You don't have to answer. You can rest and sleep if you want while we wait for your mom. I'm sure that by the time you wake up, she'll be back to collect you.
Maybe we'll be able to go back to the capital.
Amelia yawned, stretched out, and then nestled her head into Cecilia's lap.
I hate Granum. I'm not sorry about what happened to it. I just hope that we can go back home after all of this.
The Marchioness's daughter yawned once more, closed her eyes, and snuggled deeper into the plush couch. Cecilia and I sat in silence for a long time as the little girl slipped off to sleep. Right as she started to snore, Cecilia lifted her eyes and whispered across the room.
What do we do now?
The Black Drake woman asked.
Charles, what do we do with her now?
Do you think you could carry her? I asked, and stood from the couch with a low grunt.
Yes, but what are we doing? Her mother isn't coming, Charles. Her mother is probably somewhere in one of those cages.
I already know that, Cecilia. That's why we're going to transform her. We need to get it done before she can wake up. Once we get her inside the machine, can you portal out, grab her mother and a few other aristocrats, then place them within my machine? I want to get all of this finished by tonight, so once all of the men are done celebrating, we can head out toward Tulna.
That's what you snuck off to do,
the redhead breathed.
I'm not surprised, because you're a workaholic.
You're not going to tell Edany on me, are you? I chuckled.
No.
Cecilia shook her head.
I think a few of us understand where you're coming from. I know Edany's concern comes from a loving place, but she doesn't understand how your mind works. You fully believe you can't take a minute's rest, and if you do, you feel guilty, don't you? You feel like you're failing everyone if you breathe and relax just once. Even when she asked you to lie down and sleep for a bit, it was nearly killing you. If you're not moving, you're failing, and that means all of this will be for nothing.
Yes, to all of that. At least one of my monster women understands where I'm coming from.
I think it's more than just me.
The redhead smiled, shifted Amelia into her arms, and slowly stood to her full height.
Josephine and Daisy understand too. Ryan feels the same, but I think she shows it a lot less. Of course, she was an imp, and imps spend most of their lives working, may it be tunneling or hauling out dirt from the newly made tunnels. I just think she shows it a lot less because she finally has a life where she doesn't have to work herself to the bone.
You seem to know a lot about imps, I snorted and led the Black Drake woman through the cabins toward the laboratory. Have you been reading up on them?
I've glanced in the books that Daisy has lying around,
the redhead shrugged.
But I also understand from the perspective of a harlot. Josephine does too.
What do you mean? I asked, and the redhead stepped through the open door of the laboratory.
It's tough to be a harlot. It's emotionally taxing, to say the least. You have to be constantly vigilant and hide from any signs of danger. But then you also have to search for recruits. Sure, most of the women who are harlots are older, and a lot of the newer agents are their children. But we have to be on the lookout for women like me. I knew there was something wrong with our system that so many aristocrats were used to and compliant with. No matter how much you do for the organization, no matter how many recruits you bring in, there is so much more work that needs to be done. If you take a break or even let yourself breathe for a second, you could be caught, or you could lose another new member. Josephine probably feels that way more than I do. She's a goddamn daughter of the creator of the Hollits.
Josephine's never told me about the weight she has to bear, I started, and then paused for a long moment. But you can see it in her eyes. You didn't meet her when we did, and her eyes always looked so burdened. There was this ever-present look in her eyes. I can barely describe it, except the single word. Sadness. She looked as if she could barely carry the weight of whatever was troubling her. And when we discovered she was a harlot, I initially thought it was just that. And then we learned her mother was the one who created the whole organization, but that's not the end of it. Her mother contracted tuberculosis and was hospitalized. So that left the entirety of the harlots in Josephine's hands. I'm sure in the beginning it was nothing more than a handful of women here and there. But from what I've heard from both you and Josephine, there are hundreds of you in different cities. That's a lot of women and a lot of responsibility.
We have to work hard,
Cecilia whispered, opened the door to Compartment B, and settled Amelia down onto the cold, corrugated floor.
For each other. I know Edenie is determined and hard-working, but she is worried about you, Charles. But if you think you can take it, I won't stop you from pushing yourself.
Thank you. I breathed through a wide smile. Now, can you portal in as many aristocrats as you can? I want to finish this before the rest of them come back to the caravan for the night.
I'll be back soon.
The redhead instantly nodded and then disappeared in a flash of inky blue smoke. I leaned against the wall and watched through the window of Compartment B as the Black Drake woman appeared and disappeared multiple times. Then I thought back to Amelia. I felt a little bad we'd had to trick her, but she was a child, and what we were doing was for the greater good of the whole country. But there was still one thing I was curious about. Why had it taken her so long to pass out when my soldiers deployed the devices? She'd said her governess had fallen almost as soon as they'd gone off. Why hadn't she? Maybe I was overthinking it, but something certainly felt off. Suddenly, Cecilia appeared beside me from the darkened mass of blue smoke, and she stared into my face with a worried expression.
What's the matter?
The redhead asked and cupped my cheeks.
What are you thinking about?
Doesn't it seem strange? I asked, and cupped my chin as I thought. Most of the women we brought in, or at least from what I saw, were dirty and disheveled. Their clothes were covered in muck and their hair was frizzy or burned from the fires. Why did Amelia look as if she hadn't been touched by any of those things? She didn't even smell like smoke.
I noticed that too,
the Black Drake woman nodded.
Her clothes were a little dirty, but they looked like a light dusting. Nothing compared to the sludge the aristocrats were covered in. I think I have an idea of what's going on, Charles, but I might be wrong.
So tell me.
My powers aren't just portals. Essentially, it's time and space manipulation. Soulsuckers' powers are similar in a subtle way. They manipulate time or space, but the genetic embodiment of our abilities. That's how they're able to pull the soul and powers out of a physical body. The soul sucker's type of ability is often considered a mutation of powers. That's why it's so rare, and only a few women are born with it every few generations. Their mothers and their children have been proven to have a single connection, which brings us back to the beginning, time manipulation.
So what you're trying to say is, I murmured slowly with raised eyebrows, Amelia can control time?
Not time as a whole,
the Black Drake woman explained.
But a specific type of time, may it be past, present, or future. Think about it. She's a child. She probably can't control her ability at will yet, and if she can, she's barely practiced. A lot of the time, when we're children, our powers activate when we're in danger or if we're afraid. Amelia's power could have been activated after we attacked and entered the city. They kept her safe until the last second, but they would have exhausted her. So at the last second, her defenses dropped, and the potion got her. I can't figure it out, so. Is it past, present, or future time?
Think about it, I urged, and my eyes widened. When we found her, her clothes were a little dirty, but not a lot. So that means she was there when the wall started to come down.
She controls the past,
Cecilia gasped.
Charles! Do you know what this means?
We'll be able to control time, I grinned excitedly. Not by a lot, but it'll certainly give us an edge. My hand raised toward the panel of bulbs, knobs, and levers. I gripped hard onto the red one and then glanced toward the darkened window of Compartment B. In a few minutes, we'd have even more monster women, along with an augmented monster child that could control time. My mind was racing with all of the possibilities of what we could do in the future battles with the small brunette on our side. In one swift movement, I slammed the red lever down into its cradle, and electricity crackled to life. All of the bulbs above our head snapped to life with a loud hum. The sound rose in our ears as blinding white light poured out of all three of the compartments. I felt the electricity pass from the panel of lights and switches, traveled through the thick snaking wires across the floor, and finally reached my machine. The copper exterior of my machine glowed with heat, and steam poured through the bolt's cracks. The pistons at the top of the machine moved so quickly they were blurs through the air. The noise coming from my machine heightened to a single pitch and almost sounded like an opera singer's warbling voice. The blinding white light intensified and then changed in tone to an icy blue. "Close your eyes," I urged the redhead. "You don't want to damage them." The Black Drake woman nodded and did as she was told, and the blinding light exploding out of all three of the compartments brightened even more. I placed my hands over my ears as the noise heightened and rang around the small room. Just as suddenly as it started, all of it stopped, and I slowly opened my eyes. Aliana and her daughter, Amelia, were in there, and I had no idea what their abilities would be like, but it seemed I would soon find out. I stepped forward and reached for the warm door handles, then I opened them in one swift motion. The crowd of women inside my machine resembled both Josephine and Cecilia, but in different ways. Their skin was covered in thick black or red scales, but a few were intermixed with a combination of both. Their horns were of varying sizes but stayed to the same shape as the two Drake women's. They curled up toward the ceiling, some with pointed tips and others with jagged edges. Each woman's eyes shifted toward me nervously, and small smiles spread over their lips. The thing that stuck out most was that every woman standing inside of the caravan was insanely beautiful. I was used to seeing the Drake Legion regularly, but having all of these Drake women in the same room was almost overwhelming. Even though their abilities hadn't activated yet, I could feel their immense power as it washed over me in the small space. My eyes searched through the crowd of women as a broad smile spread over my features. All of them were so beautiful, and I would gladly take them as wives.
So,
a familiar voice from behind me chuckled.
I'm not surprised you snuck away to do this, and I guess I should stop badgering you to rest.
Edeny, I uttered, turned, and gestured the rest of my monster women out of the compartment while I searched for the little girl who would make or break our future battles. What are you doing here?
All of us are here, Charlie,
Valerie cried.
We have a surprise for you.
What is it? I asked, and finally lifted my head toward the crowd of my monster women.
Oh, there you are, honey.
Cecilia gasped as Amelia appeared out of the compartment with her mother.
Let's get your dress back on, okay? It's pretty cold out there, and we don't want you getting sick.
I nervously glanced over my shoulder toward the redhead as she grabbed the Marchioness's daughter's dress from Compartment B and hastily placed it over the young girl's body. The thumping of boots brought my attention back toward the crowd of my women in front of me, and a familiar short woman moved through the doorway.
It's this,
Daisy stated, and the crowd of her sisters stepped aside to let her through. The petite brunette gestured to her shoulder, where a beast I'd never laid eyes on in my entire life perched. Just as Matilda had described, the creature was half-bird with beautiful orange, yellow, and gold markings on its feathers, while the back half of it was that of a cat. I stared at it for a long moment with my eyes wide, and I took an instinctive step forward. "They're supposed to be extinct," I breathed, and reached out my hand toward the griffin. They supposedly died off hundreds of years ago. Daisy, how did you get this? As I spoke, the beautiful creature tilted its head in my direction and made a strange chirping sound. Its long talon nails dug into the bear girl's shoulders, but her face showed no signs of pain or discomfort. In fact, the petite woman reached up and stroked the griffin's soft-looking feathers.
It was sent to us,
Matilda grinned, pushed through the crowd, and pointed toward a small piece of rolled parchment tied to the griffin's leg.
By the scientist. It seems she wants to communicate with us. Isn't that mighty nice, partner?